Welcome to Career Tools. This week, answering why do you want this job when you are overqualified?
Part 2.
The questions this cast answers are, how do I answer why do you want this job when I'm overqualified? How should I explain a step back? And what should I do when I have to take a job I'm overqualified for?
Part 2 of our answer is to emphasize the positive. This part of the answer requires the most amount of forethought, the most pre-work, the most advanced work. You're going to describe the things that make this job attractive to you. For example, your skills match, it allows you to learn, you want to work with good people, and everyone you met so far has been great. If you're taking a step back or taking a job because you need to right now, it can be difficult to think of the things that make the job attractive to you other than, hey, I think I can get this role. And still, there are benefits, right? You know that there will be, or you would have chosen a different role that you're overqualified for to apply for. If you're struggling, if it's hard for you to see the positives, we have three categories of kind of elements or pieces of the job that you can think about, you know, to kind of aid your creative process in this way to give yourself a, yeah, this is going to be good mentality about it. So think about the positive things that you can bring to the role as a candidate. Think about them in four categories, grouped into two categories of two. So skills and experience and traits and abilities. You won't need to use all the items that you come up with, but as many lists as you can build will be helpful. It's better to have a long list from which to choose the three best items than to only have three items that you have to pick, right? So it's a little bit like brainstorming. And I think too, for myself, like the earlier I was to start this part of the exercise, the better, because
yes,
I have three ideas right at the beginning. And then in the 24 hours after that, my brain like gives me extra things that I didn't think
so. It molds on them, right? And you suddenly think of another one in the shower.
For sure. Or on the treadmill.
Right. Or you're watching TV and somebody says something and you say, oh gosh, that's one. I should have used that one. Yeah. So the earlier you start this, the better. Like even before you've found any jobs, if you have an idea of what job you might be going for, or even if you don't, like just a list of things that you think are valuable about your experience, you know, you can start there. And then when you find the job that you want to go for, you can just tailor it down.
Right. So the reason that we're using categories is that it gives you different kind of lenses to look at your previous jobs. And this can help you to think of like more items and find appropriate items based on the job you're interviewing for. And if you have a career management document, like we talked about in our previous cast, that might be a place to go look, like go read that and then, you know, kind of think through. That would be where I would start, because then I wouldn't have to stretch my mind back into the past. So category one, how to apply your skills, or how do your skills apply to this role specifically? So break down your previous roles into skill sets and then apply them to the job description, the role description that you're looking at. Keep in mind that the definition of a skill is sometimes nebulous. We describe it as the ability to perform an action, so something that you do. So if I have skill in, I always think of software, which, you know, like a skill would be I could write code in Ruby, or I think the new cool one is Rust now. Of course, I say these things, like I can't do that at all. If you have that ability to write code that, you know, complies and doesn't have bugs, then that would be a skill.
Yeah. And actually, you can break that skill down further, right? If you can define the problem, define how the code needs to be created in order to fix that problem, then write the code, and then QA your code, and then implement the code, that's five different skills. And if you have that skill as a coder, but you can't find a job as a coder, which would be weird, but anyway, but the ability to describe a problem and work out a solution, that's a skill that can be used in a billion jobs.
Yeah.
And that breaking down of the skills helps you find jobs that you can do, even if they're not obvious or they're not things that you would have normally looked at. I worked in local government for a long time, and one of the jobs was to be in the town hall and have people come up to the, go to the town hall and say, you know, I've got this problem with my housing, my street, my, you know, could be anything. And the people on the reception desk had to find the right person to solve that problem. That the ability to talk to someone and understand actually what the problem is and then find the right person to help that person and to be able to explain, this person is going to help you, this is how they help you, this is how these two things relate together, is actually quite a difficult skill to find people who are able to do. And probably being on the reception desk in a town hall isn't something you're thinking of if you're a coder. And yet you can see, because I've just explained it, hopefully you can see how the first part of that job really relates to being a receptionist in a town hall. And actually, it was quite a fun job. Lots of people really enjoyed it. Other people didn't, because general public is not always fun for people. But the people who liked it, who like solving problems, really liked it. So it's a real definite possibility for you. So breaking down the skills into some really quite small component parts will give you a really long list, and B, help you fit your skills to things that probably you wouldn't even have thought of.
Yeah. I know it's been a long year for everyone, and maybe you want to do this just to give yourself a boost.
Yeah.
Because I was just thinking through what I would kind of put on that list and thinking, oh, hey, I'm not useless, which this year, I don't know about y'all, but we've been doing a lot, but it hasn't really felt like, oh, yeah, I'm super skilled. Okay, so we talked about that. We also kind of, you know, if you're thinking through like an accountant, right, you have the ability, the skill to produce accurate work, follow processes, procedures, deal with customers or clients, communicate complex topics, solve problems. That would all be useful in another area. Retail, maybe. I mean, there's both of these examples are adaptability of your skill set, which is probably not something you've really thought through in the past. And it's going to help to shift your focus, I think. I think it will say, it will bring your mind around to the idea of these are the things really that are a positive about me being involved in this role, and hopefully get your mind off of saying, you know, I'm overqualified to the hiring manager, because we don't need to do that.
Isn't there a holiday coming up? Isn't there one in the first week of September?
Yeah, Labor Day is 2 Mondays from now.
Right. Take an hour on that Monday and just do this for yourself, whether or not you think you're going to be laid off, right?
Yeah.
It would be a good, like you say, a good boost. It would give you some ideas. And if, God forbid, that you do get laid off in the next 6 months, you'll have your list started.
Yeah, it's a good time, no matter how secure you feel in your position, to look at your resume, look at your career management document.
And the other nice thing about it is you still have 2 months until your annual review. So yeah, if you don't like your list, you could, you've got 2 months to rescue yourself. Okay, so category 2 is, how does your experience relate to this role? So again, we're going to break your experience into discrete chunks and apply them to the job description. And in this case, experience is the environment in which you use those skills that we've just talked about. So for example, in a certain kind of industry with a certain kind of customer, you could have experience with small businesses or large businesses in the government sector or in nonprofits. You could have experience in boats like my one guy did, or experience in travelators like my other guy did. Like being working in an airport is different to working in other spaces just because of the security and all that kind of stuff. So if you've got experience, like even if you're a job that's fairly transferable, like an accountant, if you're an accountant in an airport, you know, that's different to someone who's been an accountant in a big four firm, right?
Yeah.
And so that experience makes a difference, and it also makes you different from other candidates, and it's something that can be brought to whatever you're doing next.
Yeah. For example, there's a lot of service jobs in Texas that don't require experience with Spanish-speaking customers, and it would be really helpful to have that skill.
Mm-hmm. I'm always amazed. When I go into the post office, there's 5 people behind the counter and 3 of them are speaking Spanish. And none of they all look, you know, very European rather than South American. And I'm always amazed that they they have that skill and are confidently describing post office terms, which are not the easiest thing to understand.
Yeah.
Another language.
There was actually a woman at HEB this morning speaking Spanish to a customer about like where to find things too. So where we live is, that's the norm.
And it's often not in a job description, yet would be really helpful. So
yeah, bilingual is always probably going to be really helpful. I wish I had that skill. I would really, really like to have the ability, have learned another language. Okay. So category three, how do your traits apply to this role? Traits are what is commonly thought of as personality. They also relate well to soft skills mentioned in our recent cast. This is things like being high energy, being adaptable or detail-oriented, being careful, decisive, or creative, being dependable or diligent. These are all traits that you may possess, and you should think through them and kind of ask yourself, like, are any of these traits specifically suited to this role? For example, hopefully our accountants are detail-oriented, careful, and dependable, and not creative, big picture project starters. They're kind of two different things. Now, we've talked about this before too. You know, it depends on the company, right? There's cultures within organizations. And so if you're an accountant who is less detail oriented, that might be helpful in some cases. And there's some assumptions about what each role kind of takes. So let's think through our traits and ask ourselves, what of our traits apply? This is, again, like, this is another thing that could give you kind of a boost if you were willing to sit down and do it.
I went to a checkout. It's a terrible story. I went as a checkout accountant in a store like Home Depot, and somebody was buying doors, and they bought two doors and some other things. And it was a million years ago when you had to type in the price on the register. And it wasn't until they were leaving that I realized that the doors were £60 each. And their total bill had only come to 75, and they had two doors, which should have been 120. So careful is the last thing I am. And yeah, you know, it's a very useful trait in a checkout assistant. So
yeah, I completely understand. We have that not careful thing in common.
And then the last category is about ability. So abilities are the things that you're born with again. So the first two categories are things that you gain, like skills and experience are things that you gain as you work, and traits and abilities are things that you can hone, but tend to be things that you're more innately, people would say, born with or talented with. That's not true, because you can learn to be careful, but they do tend to be the things that you prefer, or you, the ways in which you act when you're not thinking about them. So abilities with numbers, which I don't have, or words, I do that, or problem solving. Some people are good at solving problems and some people really aren't. Some people have a real ability to get to what is the heart of the matter. Some people have the ability to find a practical solution. My dad's like that. It's like, I'm trying to put something up and he says, well, why don't you just do this and this and this? And then you can screw those things together and you'll be done. And how did I not get that ability from you? You know, putting people at their ease is a skill that can be learned. And it's also something that some people are just naturally good at. You know, mm-hmm. Some people are naturally patient. Not me. I'm describing all these things because they're things I wish I was and I'm not. And in the jobs that I've had, being patient hasn't been something I've needed to have, mm-hmm. Or needed to really have more than the ability I can stand to do it, right? When right. you're interviewing, which I did for a long time, you have to be patient enough. You have to be able to sit there and listen to a 3-minute answer that you think is pointless without like changing your facial expression. And I can do that. But sitting for 3 hours listening to someone that I don't want to listen to, couldn't do that. So you can hone these things. And this is a bit of that, like, sometimes people say, oh, that person's a square peg in a round hole. Mm-hmm. This is that it's these innate things that tend to be the things that make people round pegs in round holes.
Yeah. all this list making will allow you to kind of fill out the second part of your answer. And of course, now we're considering those kind of innate skills and things that we could also hone, but maybe are just part of our natural abilities. And usually those things are the things that are easy for you to do, that you don't have, that you have to work a little bit less at.
And you like doing.
Right.
Tends to be true.
Yeah. Which I think a lot of us like to do things that we're good at, which is good on us. We've got some examples, right? So if you're an accountant to a call center rep, you might say, as an accountant, I've had to follow processes and procedures to the letter. Yet I've had to help clients solve the problem of how to record their financial dealings where there are often many right answers. I've dealt with many sensitive situations, and I think those skills will be useful in this role.
Right. So we've just taken some things off that list and shown how they relate to the job that we're going for, even if it's not obvious. Here's another one. So an engineering manager to a production, who's now looking at a production engineer role. As an engineering manager, I learned just how hard it is to manage. I've got a deeper understanding of the pressure of customer requirements and costs of production and the time it takes to get from production to the warehouse. And I think that perspective will be really helpful in this role.
Maybe you're going from being a coder to working in food service and you're going to be a waiter. Whilst most people would think of coding as a solitary role, it's actually very collaborative. I have worked a lot with clients, understanding their needs and making suggestions for possible solutions. I collaborated with colleagues to divide up the work, and then when testing others' code. Those collaboration skills would be useful in a high-pressure environment like this one.
Okay, last one. A research chemist who needs a job in Starbucks. I've always been very particular about my coffee. My family laugh when I measure the temperature of the water, but the chemist in me knows that it matters if you're going to make a good cup of coffee. And this job would allow me to explore my coffee-making nerd side. Which just goes to show you don't have to be super, super serious in this. Like, the way you go into an interview directs the interview a lot. And we don't usually talk about mindset or you know, attitude. But if you can see the upside, a genuine upside of a role, then the hiring manager or whoever's hiring you, interviewing you, will see that too. And a research chemist who is having to get a job in Starbucks is, you know, most people would say that was a step down. But actually, working in Starbucks for a chemist could actually be really fun. And if you can see it that way and have a little bit of a sense of humor about it, it's much more likely that whoever's hiring you will see it that way too.
Yeah. Also, because I know a chemist who ended up being a baker and is now nationally famous for his breads, and it is genuinely his chemistry background that caused him to be wildly successful in this area. And there's even someone here in Austin who has a bakery who's really, really successful and really popular and also very delicious. And they were an engineer before.
Mm-hmm. Baking is one of those things where you have to be really, really precise. Like chefs who cook like main dishes, like meats and stuff, think that bakers are amazing because bakers have to do it exactly right. Whereas a chef can just like rescue things. Once it's in the oven, if you're a baker, it's done.
Right. There's no putting the potato in to absorb the salt in baking.
Yeah, so. Right. It's back to school time, and this year looks very different. Hardworking parents are not only working a job, but playing teacher too. It's even harder to fit in time for training. But all three of the Manager Tools trainings are available on video, and they're split into sections of no more than 10 minutes each, so you can fit them in even if you're working, parenting, and teaching too. Watch them on a mobile device while your kids play outside, and you can learn something and wear the kids out too. Find out more by going to managertools.com and look for products in the menu.
Okay, answer part three. End on a positive note. The last part of our answer should make it clear that we've thought about the specific issues and end on a positive note that moves the conversation on. So we're hoping to, you know, demonstrate both that we've thought it through and give a positive outlook, because of course we're hoping to paint all of this in a positive light because it certainly could be positive. Overqualified is a really broad term, and it encompasses a range of concerns that a hiring manager might have, all kinds of stuff. It might be that they're worried you're a manager and you'll want to manage the team, or that you'll be bored with the low-level work that you're doing, or that as a business owner, you'll be hard to manage. It could be that they think, hey, this person's going to want a different salary come, you know, a certain amount of time. All kinds of concerns that they may have. Try not to guess, y'all, because it's impossible to guess what other people are thinking. Some examples to cover some of these scenarios. I'm looking forward to being back in the weeds, something you could say. You could say, I'm looking forward to going back to basics. I'm looking forward to sharing my perspective once I understand how your team works and the product, of course. You could say, as my own boss, I've always had customers who managed me, so I don't think that it will be hard for me to work for you. I'm looking forward to be part of the team and not the boss, not being the boss. So these are all, you know, the end of your answer that hopefully will kind of give the hiring manager a sense of the positives, which of course we are hoping to highlight, right?
Yeah. And also that you see positives in the job, right? You're not taking this job because it's your last resort. You're taking this job because you're actually genuinely interested in it and genuinely see a good outcome for it.
Yeah.
So here's one example with all of the parts of the answer. So this is a lawyer interviewing for a job in a library. So I'm really excited about this job. I'm not worried about being overqualified. In fact, I see that as an advantage. The problem with being overqualified is, in my experience, people act like they're better than the job, and you're never going to hear anything like that from me. As a lawyer, I've had my head in a book for the last 10 years. I've honed my recall skills. I'm the one that my colleagues come to when the right case law is on the tip of their tongue, but they just can't remember it, and I'm always the one who can remember it. I think that's going to be really useful here because I'll be able to direct patrons quickly. Most of all, I am looking forward to being able to serve the community that I live in. Helping people here in this city find the answers to their questions, or just a good book to get lost in. Okay. It's super positive. It shows how their skills relate, and it tells you, why do you want this job? Right? And by the way, if you're thinking, a job in a library would be awesome, it is super competitive. It was the most resumes I've ever had for a job was really? Every time we advertised a job in a library. Yeah. And if you want a job in a library, please, please know that the first question is, what's your favorite book? So have an answer.
Oh, gosh.
I interviewed so many people who didn't have an answer.
Now that you've said that, I'm thinking through, like, the town where I'm from has the most beautiful library, and I spent a lot of time there as a kid on like field trips and stuff like that. And I am imagining myself in that library and thinking, oh my gosh, it would be really cool to have a job in a library. Also because my dream house is for sale in my hometown, and it's
on the same street practically, isn't it?
It's basically like kitty corner across a tiny park from the library. Not that I can afford this house, obviously, and not that probably I'd have to take a library position on top of my current role in order to afford the house, but I could always walk to work.
You'd be surprised, though. If you walk into a library, most of the people in a library have masters or PhDs in library science, library book stuff.
So I'm totally not qualified.
Yeah. It's amazingly competitive.
I love it.
Museums are the same. Like, sure. Everybody wants to work in a museum, and it's so competitive, and they are so well qualified. Anyway, there you go.
I'm so impressed.
So if you were thinking, that's my last resort job, I'd cross that one off your list.
Call Starbucks.
You are unlikely to get it. Exactly. Okay, so the very last part of any interview is the close.
Yeah.
And this is the last part where you have one more chance to impress upon the interviewer how much you want the job. And so you say, Kate, I really want an offer, and here's why. And then you say two or three reasons why you want an offer, what excites you about this particular role or this particular organization. So, for instance, our lawyer turned librarian might say, Kate, I want an offer, and here's why. I'm looking for somewhere where I can use my skills, serve my community, and in a possible working environment I enjoy. The Columbus City Library fits my criteria, and everyone I've met here has been knowledgeable, warm, and patron-focused. I'm excited at the thought of joining your team, and I really want an offer from the library. And it's so easy and so hard at the same time, right? To have the guts to do it.
Yeah, it's nerve-wracking, honestly.
And we have every single email that comes into our customer service about the close says, you never believe it. I did it. And they were blown away.
It worked.
Right? Every single email. So
didn't we just get an email from someone who interviewed at GM? And this was years ago that they did the interview and that they, GM called them, or maybe it wasn't GM, but it was a big company, and the company called them after their interview and said, were you tutored? Do you know someone who works here? Like, and a big part of it was the clothes. Like,
yeah. How did you manage to be such a perfect fit for this job and interview so well? Like, you must have had insider information. He was like, no, I just had the interview series from Manager Tools.
Yeah. So good. It's nerve-wracking to do the close. And I can tell you this, hopefully we can give you the confidence. It will help. It's awesome. The hiring manager loves it. And also, if you know that you should do it and then you don't, you will regret it the second you walk out of the office. So just screw up your courage, and it puts you head and shoulders above all the other candidates, because the hiring managers don't hear it that much. And when they do, it's
like thank you notes, right?
Oh,
yeah. You never get a handwritten thank you note. And I have seen so many recruiters' desks that have like two thank you notes pinned to them. And it's like their entire career, like 10 years of recruiting, they've had two thank you notes and both of them are pinned to their cubicle wall because it's so unusual. So talking of the interview series, it's now August. We just said this, August 20, 2020. You can currently get the resume workbook and the interview series with the purchase of a personal license, which is $200. Or if you've been laid off, you write to customerservice@manager-tools.com. We can give you the resume workbook free of charge. And we also have a number of people in our community who volunteered to pay for the interview series for people who've been laid off, and we can connect you with those people. So
we would love to.
Yeah, those people, we have way more people who offered than took us up on the offer. And there are literally people waiting and desperate to give you the leg up that you need and the opportunity. And it's been wonderful to see the people writing in and say, you know, this person volunteered, they gave me the interview series, now I've got a job, I want to pay it forward. And so don't feel like you shouldn't do that. There's a list of people who want to help you. And when they've helped you, you can pay it forward to the next person. So yeah. customerservice@manager-tools.com.
Yeah. Being overqualified is only a hindrance if you think of it as one. This guidance forces you to work through the positive aspects of getting the job you're looking at, even when it's not an obvious move or maybe not the move that you really want to make. In the interview, if you can address the concerns of a hiring manager and relay those positive aspects of your candidacy, you've given yourself the best shot at being hired. We can't guarantee, of course, that you'll be hired, but we can guarantee that you've put yourself in the best possible position.
Good luck, and email us because we're here to help.
We're here.
customerservice@manager-tools.com. Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic.